Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I'm your host, and this is episode 158 on how to take huge depreciation using cost segregation with Yona Weiss. Years ago, when I was broke, I used to worry about having to pay the tax if I made more money. Then I realized that that belief was actually holding me back. It would be much better to make more money and pay more taxes in life because I'd be living a better lifestyle and producing more for society as well. So more recently, I've realized that through real estate investments, I could begin paying less tax by leveraging better tax strategy in the scope of my real estate investments. And it's for that latter, later in life reasoning that I was excited to invite today's guest, Yona Weiss, to the show. Yona is the business development director for Madison Specs, one of the largest cost segregation specialists in the country. If you've remembered some of the other multifamily episode guests, we've touched on a little bit the topic of cost segregation. But today we're going to take a quick yet deeper dive into Yona's expertise on using cost segregation to reduce tax liability. Are you now excited? Let's get to it. All right, Mr. Yona Weiss, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. How are you doing today?
I am doing really well. Thanks so much, Dan, for having me.
Absolutely. I am excited, if anybody could be. I think tax deferral and tax strategies for real estate investors, I think it's an exciting topic. So I'm excited, and I was looking forward to our episode here today, talking about cost segregation and getting into some of the details of that. But for listeners who may not know who you are and who Madison Spec is, do you want to kind of give a little bit of background on you and your business and what you guys do there?
Sure. So I'm Yona Weiss. I've been with Madison Specs. We're the largest national cost segregation firm in the country, working in all 50 states. I was a teacher for about 15 years and kind of got involved in real estate in different ways through brokering and commercial mortgages, and then kind of found my way into this really cool commercial real estate company, Madison, and enjoying it, taking kind of my teaching background and educating people on this very complicated yet so important topic of cost segregation.
Nice. So let's start with, what is cost segregation, if anyone doesn't know?
Sure. I think a lot of people don't know. It's a really weird name, right? And I think that gets people caught up on it. But it's really an amazing tax deduction. So essentially what it is an advanced form of depreciation. Okay. And depreciation is one of the best tax deductions, income tax deductions that you can have as a real estate investor. So let's just break it down and kind of back up a step and understand what depreciation is, so we can then understand what cost segregation is, which, like I mentioned, is just an advanced form of that. So depreciation is, the name means it, something, the word means something going down in value as time goes on, right? So, but the IRS gives you this tax deduction when you buy a property. They allow you to write off the entire value of that building over a certain period of time. So for commercial properties, it's 39 years. For residential or multifamily properties, it's over a 27 and a half year period. You're allowed to literally take a tax write-off a little bit every year against your income tax. But that's a long time to wait, okay? 39 years to write off the whole property. There's an advanced form, okay? And that's called cost segregation. Cost segregation is the IRS's definition of depreciating the property according to its assets. So kind of segregating out the cost into, personal property, stuff like movable things in the building, cabinets and carpeting and furniture and appliances and fixtures, things like that. All of that depreciates on a five-year schedule. So which means if you can identify what all of those assets are in a property that depreciate on a five-year schedule, you can actually take that entire value as a tax write-off in the first 5 years. So, which you cannot do unless you perform what's called a cost segregation study.
All right, I'm taking notes here, as I imagine listeners would be doing too. Perfect. This is exciting, and I'm a little bit aware of this. I did research on, before our show on it, and also I kind of secondhand heard this from a few of our big multifamily guests who have come on the show over the years here. They're buying 5, 10, 15, 20 million dollar deals. Let's run through like a brief example just to kind of highlight. Let's take is a $10 million example a good enough one, and maybe we'll call it like 10% land value, so we have $9 million building value. If you had to guess, maybe like what portion of the $9 million in value would be a 5-year broken down asset segregation that you could take up front, if you had to guess.
Sure. So let's first break it down like this and understand what the difference would be. Okay. So your $10 million property, and that's great, but this can even apply to much, much smaller properties. Okay. So even $1 million, $500,000. But let's take this $9 million. Let's say you weren't due to cost segregation. You would be getting your regular depreciation deduction every year. Let's just start there, would be approximately, and I just punch in the numbers here, $327,272 a year. That would be your tax deduction, which means on a $9 million property, maybe your net operating income is, let's say, $1 million. Okay, that's pretty good. Okay, it's about a 12% return. Net operating income, right off the bat, you deduct $327 from that, and you're left paying taxes on the remaining, $670,000. Cost segregation comes in and says, in a multifamily building, oftentimes you'll have 20% or so of the building, sometimes more, can be allocated to those faster lives. So on a $9 million property, let's just take 20%. That's $1.8 million, okay, of extra depreciation deductions that you can take over those first 5 years. Okay, so that means an extra 360. So basically you've doubled your depreciation deduction just by doing a cost segregation study in those first 5 years, meaning you're front loading that, you're increasing your cash flow, because remember, you're lowering your income tax liability, that net operating income stays in your pocket. But gets better.
Okay, all right, carry on before I interject my next step of the example here.
Yeah, because it gets better. So the best part about this is that there's more things that depreciate. I just gave one example on a 5-year schedule, but oftentimes there's something called land improvements, which depreciate on a 15-year schedule. So you're actually going to be adding on land improvements, which includes anything like landscaping or pavement, if you have a parking lot, curbing, fencing, any type of things that is outside of the property, signage, lighting, anything like that. All that value can sometimes be, 5 to 10% as well on a multifamily property, which means, you're getting more tax deductions. And there was a huge tax reform a few years ago that introduced a new law called 100% bonus depreciation, which is probably the biggest game changer to the tax code for real estate investors in the history of the tax code, which allows you to take all of that depreciation that we just talked about that's accelerated, okay, we're talking about accelerated depreciation here, and depreciate it in the first year, okay, meaning take the entire deduction in the first year.
Okay. So in that instance, we had 10% more, so we had $1.8 million. We had another $900,000 write-off that was the 15-year schedule?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so before this bonus depreciation, 100% in the first year, that would have been divided out over 15 years?
Yep.
Okay.
So and now you can take all of that all in the first year. So you're talking about a $2.7 million. You spend, buy a $10 million property, maybe you're putting down $2.5 million on the down payment, right? If you're putting down 25%, you just get a first-year tax write-off of $2.7 million.
That is, so I'm doing some math here, and I'm just going to kind of lay out the example in another fashion here. That would also, so we're going to, I'm going to carry this example in a direction without going into the 100% bonus depreciation, because I think that's a very effective tool in a lot of other categories. But I think for certain high net worth individuals, certain very high income individuals, let's just say that the investor who is buying this building had the $2.5 million in cash. They could have got it from a 1031. They could have, however they did it, they had the $2.5 million. So they're not raising money and syndicating funds to do this. And they happen to make $747,000 and almost $750,000 a year they make in income, and they're real estate professionals, so they can take depreciation on their taxes. Exactly. So that investor would have basically put down the money, the $2.5 million, bought the deal, and said, you know what, I don't necessarily need to take all $2.7 million in write-off this year. It might not make sense for me because I'm going to make $747,000, so I'd rather net zero that out. I mean, is that a theory in that example that could be reality by this high-income $750,000 investor in that scenario?
Sure. And that's the beauty of the bonus depreciation, is that it's an option. You can choose to take it, and you can choose just to do the cost segregation, which would get you that, you know, accelerated depreciation up front. There's
so,
another beauty
so let's
of
carry it.
It that, yeah, go ahead.
Let's carry it one more moment for me. Humor me just a moment, Yona. So let's say that 5 years in, that portion, that $360,000 a year of 5 year items in depreciation, that's spent. So after 5 years, the write-offs for this investor kind of start to lose steam. Would it be possible to 1031 exchange this building into another building and start the clock over and reset all of these timelines on the next deal?
So when you do a 1031 exchange on a deal, the depreciation actually carries over from the previous property, and the new depreciation schedule on the new property you buy, the Uplake property, is based on the purchase price. Like we said before, it's based on the purchase price minus the gain, so minus whatever you've taken depreciation before. So you don't reset the depreciation entirely when you do a 1031 exchange, because you have to carry over what you've, you know, you're only allowed to carry over to new property what you've what's already been taken in depreciation. However, I would say that this investor you're talking about, this strategy, I would say, is a little more, this consolidation fits in really well with an overall strategy, which is, if you're only buying one property, okay, and that's it, you're a one property guy your whole life, which I doubt that people who are real estate investors do, but for that person, it may not make sense to do the consolidation. It may make sense just to have, you know, equal depreciation, straight line depreciation over the course of ownership. Right? Maybe it does make sense. However, in our example, after 5 years, you're going to be taking a 70% or so of depreciation as opposed to the 100% allocation each year. However, if you're buying more than one property, let's say you're buying next year another property, the year after another one, every year or two you're buying another property, the depreciation and that accelerated depreciation from all of those will carry across all of your properties. Okay? So the income from all of your properties can be offset. So even if right now, after 5 years, property A has less depreciation deductions, but property B may have more, and that's going to equal out. And this is one of the great strategies of using this, that you can use it across your whole portfolio.
Perfect. Interesting. So before we went in that direction, you were getting ready, I think, to add something on to maybe the 100% bonus depreciation before I took you off course.
Yeah, there is something really important to know, that in your example, the guy who's making $750,000, okay, he may not be able to use that huge bonus depreciation deduction, right? He may not be able to use all of that. However, he may take it this year and then carry that forward into future years. So if you can't use the entire $2.7 million of deductions, what ends up happening is it doesn't go away. It doesn't disappear. What happens to it is called, it like enters an imaginary bank account, and it's called a passive loss carry forward. So you can use it next year if you want. And actually, with the tax reform that just happened, the CARES Act a few weeks ago, just added a new component to that, reinstated something called net operating loss carry backs, which means if you in 2019 haven't filed your 2019 taxes, and in the past 5 years you have paid income tax, if you have extra depreciation this year, you can actually carry it back. You can amend your past year's returns and get a refund. If you have that extra depreciation, you can use that to offset your income from previous years as well.
I want to point out for anyone listening that didn't catch it, when we ran through that depreciation example there and we both got excited, maybe there's someone wondering why that happened. That's because the guy making $750 total that year wrote off $750 as a depreciation. That was like a loss. So his $750,000 in income was like pretty much zero tax liability. And that's why we were so excited. I digress. I wanted to put that bullet back in there. And I want to mention on the CARES Act, Yona, you may not have an opinion on this or not. I don't know. But net operating loss carryback and this refund is kind of a stimulus thing. What's your idea? Do you think that like these politicians slip that in there to help keep commercial real estate afloat, try to make it exciting to people who have money? Like, do you have any reasoning why they tuck that in there?
I'm not sure the reasoning. You know, I think it does have to do with the fact that real estate is taking a big hit, and all the time, you know, Congress is passing laws to benefit real estate investors, and there's a history, you know, behind that. So I would think that, yes, it did have something to do with the, you know, stimulating real estate owners, commercial real estate owners who are actually taking a big hit right now. That's actually a pretty good theory. We know that, you know, this whole bonus depreciation thing was probably the greatest thing that ever happened to real estate owners, and that came about just in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act a few years ago. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was the reasoning. As we know, the 80% or so of Congress invest in real estate. So it's no doubt why they're making tax deductions, especially for themselves.
Yeah, and that was one of the theories that came up from a friend of mine. We were out on his boat in Florida hanging out, and he was, I forget, he had, you know, few hundred single family rentals, and he was excited. I think that the bonus depreciation was just kind of enacted. It was the first time I'd heard about this cost segregation, actually. And it was like, oh, he's, you know, this is happening so that we can kind of keep the multifamily boom going. And I thought, wow, that's interesting, because I remember a really good book for you or anyone listening to check out would be Winning Through Intimidation by Robert Ringer. And it was written in the 70s. And the guy was like a commercial real estate broker, and it was really cool, the things he set up so that he would get his commissions and he wouldn't get renegotiated at the table. But the point specifically from that book that jumps to mind now was he talks about kind of at the end of the book where his experience in multifamily as a boom and doing the listings, it kind of came to an end when they actually changed some of the commercial real estate. Used to be able to depreciate it, I forget if it was maybe on 15 years, so the depreciation schedule was like way in favor of owners back then. It changed and it really softened the multifamily market. So it's maybe a very important thing for real estate investors to pay attention to at a bigger level when you're getting into bigger deals, especially how those tax advantages are being sliced and diced by Congress. Because, you know, while we're seeing them go in a direction that's favorable to us now, no one knows what future administrations are going to bring in, take out, modify, and that could significantly impact the value of real estate and, you know, adjust the cap rates either up or down and the values in, you know, a similar or a opposite direction of the cap rate.
Right. Excellent point. Cool. What was the name of the book again? Right. I'll listen to the replay, but just so I have it now.
Robert Ringer is the author. And the book was Winning Through Intimidation. And it's good to go on Amazon and get like an old copy when the pages are like yellow, they're used, it's out of print. Find the older one, because I'm told, I've never read them both, but my mentor who handed me that book recommendation at just the right time He told me get the older one because it was a little more raw and it had a little more of Robert Ringer's attitude. And the attitude he has in there, it's kind of entertaining. It's not rude, but he has this I don't know, this certain like swagger or confidence that maybe like a younger man writing a book versus the older man going back through and editing it out a little bit. I found it to be quite entertaining to get the old one.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll check it out.
Cool. So let's shift a little bit of gears. I think we got a good overview of cost segregation. And we did a $10 million deal, and you said, well, hold on, Dan. You know, it could happen on a 500 or a 1,000. So what price point of deal, or maybe there's a renovation cost. Let's say I have a building, you know, my own example, bought it for 650. I'll probably have 200 or so more in renovations over a three-year period. Is that too small? You said it isn't already. So I'm curious on a $500,000 deal, or maybe a deal with, you know, $800,000-$900,000 in there. What would be the cost and the benefits on a deal like that if you had to guess?
The benefits there would be, you know, relatively less because, you know, everything we're doing is it's percentage based. Okay. So we're reallocating, 10%, 20%, whatever that is. Each building is going to be different. I was using rough numbers before, but I say any property purchased over $1 million, it's usually a no-brainer, the amount of tax benefits that are there. And one of the things that we do as a, you know, as a firm, and a lot of the cost segregation firms out there do this as well, is we'll provide an upfront analysis for free at no cost, just to show you what the potential tax savings will be. And it's not just like a shot in the dark, like we hope it will be this. It's actually, we do it like it will not be less than this. Okay, we're doing a conservative estimate, and it's based on the thousands. I mean, we've done over 16,000 conservation studies. We have a lot of experience in every type of asset class. So, you know, when we show you these numbers, you'll see for yourself what the difference of my tax benefit if I was just doing straight line depreciation versus if I did a full conservation study, what those differences would be. And so I think it's clear as day when you have a property over $1 million, how much that will be. Under $500,000, I don't highly recommend it just because, again, the percentages don't really make sense. There is a fee involved, of course, to do this, to actually get a conservation study done. Our fees, you know, run anywhere between $4,000 and $10,000, depending on the property size and type. Because this can be done not just for multifamily. This can be done for retail, office, any type of property whatsoever, whether it's an investment property or a business property. You can do this. So it's definitely worth getting that analysis done.
So when you're saying a $4,000 to $10,000 fee, is that for the analysis, or is the upfront analysis kind of like a kicking the tires? And then it's like, all right, let's green light this and do the full study. And that is where the $4,000 to $10,000 cost comes into play.
Correct. So that's exactly, exactly right. The analysis we do is free. No cost, no obligation, just to show you and educate you. And then if you decide to engage us, then, yeah, that's where the fee will come in. We'll send an engineer to the property. We'll take a full survey and study, you know, pictures and measurements of the property. And then I'll come back with this full, you know, 80, 90, 100-page report, which produces an updated depreciation schedule.
So who are all the players here? Like, I have my own tax, account, and we've been working together for years. I'm not having to totally relax. You guys would work hand in hand with him. There's an engineer you mentioned,
yeah.
And who else would be involved? Like, who is the team and what's everybody doing?
So we have everything in-house. We're not an accounting firm. Most accountants cannot do cost segregation because they need the engineering component to it. So what we do is we have engineers in-house. We have accountants in-house that solely focus on this cost segregation, which means we're reviewing it, we're doing the numbers, we're creating that report, and we work hand in hand with your accountant so that they, you know, they totally get it. And it's pretty straightforward. Like, we do all the work, basically make the accountants look like rock stars because they're getting these huge tax deductions. So it's really a win-win.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So, all right. I have a 10-unit building I'm working on. I had to go through rezoning. It was kind of the example I floated to you there. It's probably going to take me another year to finish construction, turning it over. I have tenants in there. So it's been like a 2 or 3 year project. Is a cost segregation on a deal like that something that's kind of like rolling and I'm modifying it, or would I wait until like the third year once I've, invested in all of the improvements and gotten it stabilized and then do the cost segregation timing? Where would I want this to happen on a deal like that?
So you really have your options, because it depends on, at what point you're going to need those extra deductions. And so it's kind of relative, but when doing renovations, you can actually double dip. So you can do the cost segregation study on the purchase. Okay. You acquire the property, your depreciation is based, the amount that you can write off for depreciation is based on your purchase price. Okay. That's how the IRS determines that, the purchase price minus the land value. Then whenever you make renovations, whatever capital expenditures you make and add money into the property, all of that money is added to the basis. So you can now go and take a cost segregation study on the renovations in a later year, or 2 years later, 3 years later, and you can get the tax benefits and even the bonus depreciation on those renovations at a later point.
Gotcha. And a lot of those renovation items are probably 5-year items too. I mean, replacing carpet. I mean, I don't know how, like, tile and stuff like that. So like a good chunk of improvements. I mean, it would have to be up to, I guess, the study to really get into the details.
Right.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
I have several properties, right? So if I have multiple properties in a portfolio, is it going to be property-based? I would have an engineer go out to each property, and they would kind of do these benefits, on each property, or would it benefit me to take, two or three small multifamily buildings, do them all in the same year if I could, to help save costs? Like, we send an engineer out to each, but maybe it's one CPA who sits down and does all of them, and there's some kind of, like, volume benefit, or would it not really make much of a difference, you think?
There's not that much of a difference. There is a small amount, but if they were bought as a portfolio and the properties are depreciating on the same depreciation schedule, then it's one cost segregation study for them all. However, this engineer still needs to go to each property to take, to take the survey. The advantage would be is that, there is definitely an economies to scale to a certain extent. However, if you are buying, you have, like you said, a portfolio that you bought at different times in different locations, there's really not that big of a difference. You may might give a discount based on that, but you still need a full study done on each property individually.
Makes sense. So let's walk back to our $10 million example here for a moment. And I have heard of some investors where they're going to use a syndication to put the deal together. Do you have any experience in people who might have done a syndication and be able to kind of explain to maybe the passive investors in a deal how this type of cost segregation strategy bolted onto a multifamily acquisition might help you with the capital raise by any chance?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done this a number of times. In fact, I've even gotten on investor webinars with some of my clients to help explain this for the passive investors as well and give a little insight in how this can benefit them.
Nice. So do you want to run through I don't have
yeah,
any
sure.
other
I'll,
pieces
I'll, yeah.
of example, but I maybe you could put something out.
Yeah, just one, one note on that. If you're a passive investor, so you kind of touched on briefly before, Dan, that if you're a real estate professional, then you get cost segregation is really like, magical fairy dust for you. Okay. You can basically do anything with it, which means you can use those deductions not only against the passive income from the properties, but also to offset any ordinary income or any other income that you or your spouse may have. Okay. So one or the other has to have this real estate professional status, which means you're spending, more than 50% of your time, the majority of your time in a real estate trade or business. If you're just a passive investor, okay, you're just, maybe you're a doctor, a lawyer, an IT professional, whatever it is, and you are a high income earner, but you're not a real estate professional, you just like to invest in real estate for the returns, for whatever reason, you do not get to use depreciation to offset your ordinary income, unfortunately. It's limited to the income from the properties. So the benefit is the income you're getting, okay, the returns you're getting on this investment is essentially over the first 5 years, tax-free returns, which, you know, not entirely necessarily, but oftentimes, you know, virtually or if not entirely tax-free, which you can't really say about almost any other type of investment vehicle. Okay, you're getting those returns, but you're still paying income tax on those returns. So this is really the main benefit for the passive investor, is that you can invest in a syndication, and, you know, let's say you put in $100,000 into a syndication, you're getting an 8% preferred return, let's say, just a, you know, a common example, and you're, you know, that $8,000 you're getting at the end of the year, if it was a different type of investment vehicle, you'd have to pay taxes on it. If it's a real estate and the owners, the partners, the general partners are doing a cost segregation study, well, guess what? You're going to get your K-1s, you know, that tax form that shows your investments, and it's probably going to show a loss, which means it's probably going to be a negative. And you're like, wait a second, how come I don't have to pay any tax here? And the reason is cost segregation.
Do you know if any of those negative losses would be carried over for the doctor or the attorney who was not a full-time real estate professional?
Yes, it's carried forward to the future years. However, the difference is that, I mean, like I mentioned before, they can only use that against any of their rental property income.
Gotcha. So one of the deals that I took a look at was $100,000 investment upfront. And I think, and we were just loosely discussing this. I didn't actually, you know, sit through the entire presentation, but it was something like an $80,000 or $90,000 depreciation loss that was expected in year one. And you're putting $100,000 up. So essentially you're getting like a tax write-off for the money that's being invested into a deal, which if the deal maintains and goes up in value in the way that you expect it to, it was like knocking that right off of, you know, let's say the $750,000 in income that the guy had in the first example. So it was kind of like a mind blowing shock for me when I realized, you know, how powerful it is for somebody to invest in that kind of a deal with the tax losses. And that's for me personally when I started to really open up to, oh, this is, you know, how powerful real estate is in the tax loss portion. Because for me, Yona, before that, I flip a lot of houses. I don't think I mentioned that with you today. We did like 223 in 2019. We've done 60 to date. Wow. Right now. Between those two, I think we're at $7 million in profit altogether. So we do a lot of deals, and I've always focused on like, okay, get in, get out, get the money fast. You know, okay, we're looking at this as a rental. Oh, and it, you know, it makes a few hundred dollars a month. And it was, oh, well, that's not really, you know, worth taking a look at. And even when I started to do the cap rates and pay attention to like scaled up investments, it's kind of the same thing. Like we really are blessed to have a good thing going with our main company and our main business, and that it generates like a lot of cash. We have to work hard to make that happen. But then all of a sudden, you know, I started to see what happened with, and I don't have a large amount of properties. I have a small real estate portfolio. And one of the reasons that I have not sold all that off to kind of like just free myself of it, because it's been making a little bit of money, but not necessarily moving the needle like the main business. But I've kept the real estate, and a lot of the people that I know in the business also keep the real estate, because come tax time, you know, even if it's a straight line depreciation item, you know, knocking $40,000-$50,000 in loss off against income is still a pretty cool benefit. But what we talked about here today and getting deep into cost segregation, it makes sense for any investor. For me listening, a mindset shift for me is, okay, you know, maybe buying smaller deals was in the comfort zone before, but perhaps it makes more sense to get a mindset and start to scale up to the larger deal sizes, because now you're moving the needle with the cost segregation depreciation strategy, as well as things like the mortgage pay down, the potential to raise rents. So it just really, I don't know, it's just really good. I'm grateful that you were able to kind of like share these tax strategies at this depth with me here today along the way. Are there any other things about the cost segregation that I forgot to ask in my ignorance that you feel like would be valuable for everybody listening to know?
There probably is a lot. I mean, we can go on for a couple more hours here, but I would want to just add on to the point that you just made over here about, you know, you as a real estate professional, right? You're doing a lot of deals, right? 60 properties to date, 200 and how many in 2019?
Yeah, 223.
So you're making, you said $7 million in revenue. Guess what?
And that's all my partners consider. That's not just me. That's not like, yeah, there's a lot of effort huge team behind getting those numbers done. Yeah,
absolutely. But that being said, all of that income is, according to the, from a tax perspective, is considered ordinary income. It's not considered rental income, which means you have to be a real estate professional in order to get, take advantage of the depreciation. So it pays, if you're doing flips and you're creating that much revenue from that, it also pays to buy, you know, buy and hold, long-term hold, or even, you know, 2-3 year, 4-5 year, however long it is, property so that you can take advantage of that bonus depreciation through the cost segregation. So, you know, if you're looking at a $7 million revenue, or, you know, even if it's yours individual and, you know, let's say it's $500,000, and that, you know, you'd want to try to find a way to get $500,000 of tax deductions so that you can offset that income. And cost segregation is the number one way to do that.
Yeah, and there's like a delicate balance, you know, it from that perspective of not just going out and foolishly grabbing the first, you know, price point that fits the bill. But like, you know, when I selected that 10 unit that I saw need a little bit of, I didn't know it needed the kind of work it needed, and I got into it and then found all these problems, but also evaluated in a way where I knew there was some upside and opportunity. So, okay, we're still going to have to navigate. Any real estate deal can potentially be, you know, a challenge to navigate through choppy seas. As we record this, you and I here today, it's May 2020, and we're 8 weeks or so into the COVID pandemic around the world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknowns. And so anyone who's steering the ship of a real estate investment, no matter how big or small, is feeling some kind of uncertainty and a little bit of stress about, hey, what's going to happen here, from retail to office to multifamily to the guy or gal who's got, you know, one rental, two rental properties, or a duplex with the neighbor living upstairs and they're in the other unit. So it's, you know, a balance of considering what we talked about with cost segregation against the other income, but also still being disciplined enough to select the right piece of real estate that fits, you know, risk temperament, capital availability, and a variety of other things that also has to make sense. I mean, that's at least what goes through my mind as I start to look at this. So I never ran out. We have a lot of people on the show, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 multifamily apartment units. And at first, you know, I would say, wow, that sounds like, you know, the greatest business to be in ever. And then I kind of like thought it all through instead of, you know, running out and creating that business for myself. I have blessed to have a very solid business and great business partners. And I've chose to invest my time and energy into specifically into that. Whereas the people who are running those larger investment deals to the multifamily are having to pour all of that energy into that too. So it's like, you know, there is an opportunity cost to be considered for someone like myself to get into the bigger deal. So I chose not to along the way. And so I have to like, there's opportunity costs, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make for any business owner that they also should consider before jumping right into the property. However, what we talked about here today, it's exciting. And come tax time with the accounting, it's even more exciting when the check you have to write to the IRS is significantly lower or perhaps even zeroed out, right?
Right. Exactly.
All right. Cool. So are there any other tax strategies related to real estate, or maybe not even really related to real estate, that investors or other business owners might want to research? Or is this the panacea, the best one so far?
You know, there are a lot. So you make sure, you know, you talk to your accountants. There are things like charitable trusts, you know, that you can donate, property or upon a sale of a property to kind of avoid any capital gains tax. And through that, 1031 exchanges, I'm sure you've spoken about. I'm sure this is something that comes common to exchange properties as you sell them so you can avoid capital gains tax. There are so many out there. I would say just make sure, you know, you're discussing this with your accountant. Make sure that you are being proactive in your taxes and don't assume that your accountant is taking care of you and really doing everything for your best interest. I know the accountant is the biggest trusted advisor, but believe me, accountancy is very, very wide. You know, it's a wide subject, and not every accountant specializes in every area of the tax code. So if you have real estate, you want to make sure that you have a real estate-focused accountant so you're taking advantage of those.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if you take a perspective from the accountant, I mean, a lot of us hire the accountant when we're starting off and our seed might be a little smaller than it is as we've gained experience and some momentum in our businesses. They are probably busy with a myriad of clients and they probably also suffer from momentum in their business. So I definitely think it's wise, and we've mentioned this before on our show here, to take some level of responsibility for the taxes. And that's why I asked specifically that question. Hey, is there anything else we should research? Because I do take it seriously, and I make a point, not day and night, to study the tax code, but like I do want to be aware of personally as a real estate investor, the things that I might want to benefit to, as opposed to completely blindly abdicating that responsibility to my tax professional. I'm sure all the listeners are shaking their heads saying, yeah, Dan, that's why we're listening to the REI Diamond Show right now. I digress.
Right. right.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So are there any book recommendations for anyone that maybe came to you and said, hey, Yona, I'm like investing in real estate, so it could be like tax related or business, or maybe they just want to get into real estate investing that you might make?
Sure. So Bigger Pockets, I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, but I would check out Bigger Pockets. They have a number of books that they've published themselves, including one on taxes, on real estate taxes. So I would go to Bigger Pockets, check out their bookstore. And they've published a number of books over there. I've read a few of them, but I would say there's actually another book that someone who's looking to get into commercial real estate, really great book. Actually, I'll mention two here. One is called Crushing It in Commercial Real Estate, and that's by Brian Murray. Really great guy and excellent book. So check out Crushing It in Commercial Real Estate. And Joe Fairless put out a book a couple years ago, or last year, I think, actually, called The Best Ever Real Estate Syndication Book. Okay, and that's related to his brand, the best ever podcast he has, et cetera. So that is literally a step-by-step guide. I mean, it's about 400 or 500 pages, but it's a step-by-step guide of how to do a commercial, a multifamily syndication. If you don't know anything about multifamily, you don't know anything about real estate. And, you know, from someone who himself controls, you know, over $500 million, close to $1 billion of multifamily real estate, and started from nothing, started from, you know, buying a first single family house about 10 years ago, you know, he's definitely take it from him. So again, best ever real estate multifamily syndication book, and crushing it in commercial real estate.
It's been really cool. I know Joe, he's been on the show here a couple times, and to see his business grow and his brand grow over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, however long it's been. I think he had just a few hundred units at the time, and back then he was still doing them with lease options. I think he's now switched to where they're doing syndications, raising money, and actually right. taking title. I'm not sure. The details aren't all that particular. I know he's got 4,000 plus units and he's grown. So we actually have, you know, encapsulated in his show and my show both. We both, you know, cross-pollinated audiences there. But, you know, the early Joe Fairless episode versus we had him back to kind of give an update. So we have that kind of like time stamp there. And I'll make sure I put those episodes in the notes there. But my question is, Brian Murray's book, Crushing It in Commercial Real Estate, is that like, you know, is it like investor focused? Is it brokerage focused? What would be like kind of the tone and taste of that book?
So it's more investor operator focused. So someone who wants to, you know, start doing their own deals. How to go nice. About finding deals, how to go about, you know, doing it on your own, you know, on your own and with a team, but yeah, for the actual investor owner.
All right. Pretty cool there. So if you could go back and share the crown jewel of wisdom with yourself, I don't know, right when you're getting into the real estate world there, you know, what would that be, Yona?
the crown jewel of wisdom would be, and I take this with me all the time, but I would just keep it at the forefront of my mind at that time, which is, you know, we kind of hear this and it's cliche, but your network is your net worth. I think a lot of people relate to it nowadays more than ever, but your network is your network. Keep growing that network. Don't be afraid to meet new people. Don't be afraid to, you know, kind of put yourself out there and, you know, share with others about, you know, your story or whatever it is, because the people you surround yourself with are going to actually help you succeed.
Yeah, you're so right about that. I mean, I have no agenda for doing the podcast here other than getting an opportunity to talk with people like yourself. I mean, we've been, you know, conversating for 45 minutes or so, both of us with cell phones off, not having to take phone calls. I just can't get that. Most people probably can't get that any given day, and it's a challenge in this type of world to kind of get that. So I appreciate you coming, you know, and giving that to me. But that's really been one of the most powerful, impactful places for my network to grow, has been hosting this podcast to get the chance to have the conversation, really explore the knowledge. And I do business with people who I've had on the show. People listening have done business with people on the show. In fact, I've even got like business partners in Diamond Equity Investments, our house flipping company, that came through the audience of the show as a result of doing that. So, you know, anyone listening, it's not just a passive, you know, this is on in the background. I mean, we're getting ready to, you know, have you share your contact info here, Yona. So if anyone actually wants to engage, that's the point even of networking through the podcast as well. So with that, do you want to share some information, website, any information if people want to reach out?
Sure. The best way to find me is actually on LinkedIn. It's a platform that I'm extremely active on a daily basis. It's kind of taken form over the past couple of years and turned into a really cool social media kind of professional content platform. So find me there, Yona Weiss. Also, you can check out yonaweiss.com, which we'll be launching in the next week or two. I have a virtual real estate investing meetup, which is going to be an educational platform and a networking event through via Zoom. So right now we're all quarantined. We're not going out to any networking events, any real estate meetups. This is the best way to go about doing it. So you can find that on my my page there or on my LinkedIn, the Real Estate Connections virtual meetup. So that's about it.
All right. Sounds good. Well, hey, I do really, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for closing out the distractions and sharing of the knowledge and wisdom. I know I've had several light bulbs and a few pages of notes here myself, so I'm sure the audience is thinking the same thing. Thank you for coming on the show, Yona.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in early notification of future episode releases? You can subscribe on YouTube or through podcasting apps such as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts, among others. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. You could also sign up to receive the weekly new episode notification email at reidiamonds.com. My main business is buying and selling houses, 223 bought and sold in 2019, and 74 bought and sold so far in 2020. We currently have another 112 houses in our inventory, either under construction, for sale, or sold and awaiting closing. Here are three ways you and I can do business. Number one, if you buy houses in Atlanta, Chicago, or Philadelphia regions, in other words, houses that you can fix and flip or buy, fix and rent out, or sometimes just buy and do your thing, go to dealswithroi.com and sign up for the correct buyers list there. There are five lists in total, separated by region. You'll see the menu bar across the top of the page at www.dealswithroi.com. ROI stands for Return on Investment. Number two, if you are an accredited investor and you'd like to fund a deal or many passively, that is, go to fundrehabdeals.com and sign up to receive private mortgage investment opportunity emails. That's how people passively invest in our deals here at Diamond Equity Investments. And number three, if you have a deal for sale in either Atlanta, Chicago, or Philadelphia region, please send me an email or forward the details at reidiamonds.com. At this site, you can also explore the 150-plus content-rich, money-making-rich, getting-idea-packed episodes we've published over the years. Many of those ideas have made my team and I serious dough. I hope they do the same for you. Next up, we have David Finkel, author of The Freedom Formula and co-author of Scale, written with co-founder of Priceline, Jeff Hoffman, joining us on the show to discuss in detail business growth tactics, mindset, and many, many actionable strategies for your use in scaling your real estate business. Stay tuned, my friend.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.